Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The look of love is in your eyes. The look.
It's the song you didn't hear on Sunday night's Mad Men. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today on the show, TV's Mad Men is back, and it's brought with it the sounds of 1966, which is why this song didn't make the cut. We'll explain. Later in the show, we'll fast forward to 2012 with a review of Madonna's new album, MDNA, and a live performance from the Swedish duo First Aid Kit. So, Sunday night was the long-awaited premiere of Mad Men season number 5, and as usual, the show's creators were fastidious when it came to costumes, politics, and, of course, music. So last week, executive producer Matthew Weiner announced that this song, Dusty Springfield's The Look of Love, would be removed from the episode because it wasn't released until 1967, the year after the episode was supposed to take place. Now, as long as Mad Men is firmly planting us in 1966, we figured we'd go there and explore what was actually being heard that year with Anthony DeCurtis, contributing editor to Rolling Stone. Anthony, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be here, as always, John.
1966 was, I'm looking over the list of Billboard number ones for that year. It was a killing year for music.
You know, I love that period. It's really a kind of transition from all the great pop music of the early 60s. And before things either got, you know, too ambitious or pretentious, depending on your point of view a little bit later on, it's like the pop music itself was really smart. And there was a tremendous range of it, from garage hits to sort of sophisticated jazz records to, you know, great pop by all the bands that we know from the 60s. You know, the Beatles and the Beach Boys and all the Motown artists were just a step beyond the straight-ahead pop that they had started out doing. It was perfectly accessible and just a hint smarter. It was just a brilliant time.
So was 1966 a transitional year?
Yeah, I think in that regard, you know, people, I think a lot of bands and a lot of artists, you know, kind of stepped up their game. Of course, in 1967 was Sgt. Pepper, and that was a complete paradigm shifter. You know, and then everybody felt they had to do concept albums, and having a hit single was a little bit outre, you know, not
a little
outre,
bit passe. Just,
yeah, passe is a better French term. But this moment, it was still cool to have hit singles, but, you know, everybody was still you know, kind of trying to do a little bit more. And It was very much reflected in just what you heard on the radio, on AM radio, I should add.
Right. Now, you mentioned, like, everything from garage hits to more sophisticated stuff. 1966 was the year the Troggs had the number one song with Wild Thing for a while.
That's a perfect example.
But it was also the year that Frank Sinatra made a huge comeback.
Well, that's another thing. You know, you really had, you know, these kind of, well, then older artists, you know, artists who had been big in the 40s and 50s. You know, Tony Bennett was still having hits, you know, at this point. There was a sense in which, you know, that hadn't really faded out. So that right next to the Supremes and right next to the Beatles is Frank Sinatra. You know, and so, you know, it really made for a rich listening experience.
In July of 1966, Frank Sinatra went to number one on the Billboard charts with this song.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through? Something in your eyes was so inviting. Something in your smile was so exciting. Something in my heart told me I must have you. Strangers in the night, two lonely.
Frank Sinatra, a big hit for him in the summer of 66 with Strangers in the Night. We're talking with Anthony DeCurtis of Rolling Stone about the music of the year 1966. The TV series Mad Men sort of plopped us all right back down there. And, you know, give those TV producers credit because they're real sticklers for what was actually in the air, on people's, you know, bodies in terms of clothing,
yes.
the politics of the mid-60s. Would Don Draper have been listening to the Beatles or, you know, the Troggs, or would he have been listening to this?
You know, this is I think he much more likely would be listening to Frank Sinatra.
Because he turns 40 in that episode.
Well, exactly. So. And 40 was a very different thing from what 40 is now. You know, there was a sense then. I mean, it's an issue in the actual episode where, I mean, in a very dramatic sex scene towards the end, you know, Megan Draper is saying to him, you know, you're old. All you can do is sit there and watch. And, of course, Don refuses to do that. And there's a very compelling scene. But his age is a significant thing. I mean, the fact that he is 40. And right at this moment, you know, people who were 40 were not paying attention to rock and roll. I mean, there was still a kind of holdover. This was kids' music. Mm. You know, that again, that would come later, where older people would get influenced, both in terms of fashion and in terms of music, by people who were younger. I mean, before that point, you know, all of those things came from the top down rather than from the bottom up.
Now, when I started by saying that originally they were going to put Dusty Springfield's song, The Look of Love, into this episode, and when they realized it was actually from 67, not 66, they replaced it with Ramsey Lewis, the jazz pianist, doing a version of the Dobie Gray song, The In Crowd,
exactly,
which came out in 1965. Now, this was still a period where you would find pop jazz artists.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, Ramsey Lewis is kind of an interesting player. And this is he was having hits. You know, Cannonball Adderley was having hits. You know, these people were on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, next to the Beatles, next to Motown. And, you know, it was, a very complex period. And again, this is a little bit more like something that, you know, someone like Don Draper might have had his ears. You know, he might have gone to discotheques, which
right,
was
right.
also a place, and they might have been playing something like that.
So the band in the scene is covering this Ramsey Lewis song, The In Crowd. Jazz pianist Ramsey Lewis and his version of the Dobie Gray song, The In Crowd. So this came out in 65, definitely would have been in the air in
Absolutely.
1966 for someone of Don Draper's age, turning
yes.
40 in the episode of Mad Men. Anthony DeCurtis is with me, contributing editor to Rolling Stone. Soundcheck listeners, what were you listening to in 1966? Leave a comment on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. One of the scenes in the new episode of Mad Men that, Anthony, everybody's been talking about.
Oh, absolutely. And with good reason.
Goes back to our little entry into the French language a few minutes ago.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that in 1966, the word French, as far as women were concerned, as far as Americans are concerned, roughly translated as ho. You know, and so Megan Draper's burlesque, as it's described, her dance at Don's surprise party to this song, Zooby Zooby Zoo, was an extraordinary performance. And also something that would have been very much in the air, you know, French movies, Brigitte Bardot. I mean, you know, someone like John Lennon, for example, worshipped Brigitte Bardot. She represented, you know, the kind of apex of sensuality. And Gillian Hills, who had the first hit with the song Zooby Zooby Zoo, was a kind of a Bardot lookalike. You know, Sophia Loren sang it in a movie called The Millionaires. So this, again, was a song that was in the air around that time. It wasn't a song I heard as a kid,
mm-hmm.
but it was something that, other people may have heard and certainly is now given a dramatic new life in this episode.
Well, in this episode, actress Jessica Paré, who plays Megan Draper sings this song to her husband Don. From Sunday night's season opener of Mad Men, Season 5. That is the actress Jessica Paré as Megan Draper singing to her husband Don this French pop song, Zoobie Zoobie Zoo. So, Anthony, it's 1966. This song would have been around for a few years at
that
point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was that sense. Again, you know, these French movies, French movie stars, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know, seemed real exotic to Americans. And again, was just the kind of height of sensuality.
All right, now going back to the Billboard charts from 1966, and you know, I mentioned before all these great songs that hit number one that year. In the middle of the one of the big hits in the middle of the year was the Ballad of the Green Berets by Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler. It sat at the top of the charts 5 weeks in a row. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that, you know, I think culture moves in a variety of different currents. And, you know, there was a backlash to the revolution to come, you know, just as it was building to the Summer of Love and, you know, the kind of hippie revolution. There was a kind of pullback against that, you know, all of the protests and that kind of thing generated something like, you know, Sergeant Barry Sadler and the Ballad of the Green Berets. You know, there was a sense, you know, this was the silent majority. This was the audience that, you know, Nixon and Agnew were going to very specifically appeal to. Like, look, it's not just all about college kids smoking pot and, you know, occupying buildings, you know, while they're at school on their parents' money. You know, these are the upstanding kids who are serving, and that's what this song represented, and that's the audience it spoke to.
The song is the Ballad of the Green Berets. It was 1966's biggest hit on the Billboard charts.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat, hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret.
Ballad of the Green Berets, Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler. And Anthony, this sort of goes to the fact that the charts, this was number one song, the charts were fair game for anybody.
Exactly.
Kids, their parents, you know, you expected a fair amount of 40-year-olds would have bought this.
Completely wide open. And again, you know, a lot of the guys on Mad Men are veterans and, you know, older. And, you know, this is something that would have spoken to their desire to preserve the order that existed and that's really under siege in that show. You know, that, you know, it's not all about protesters or, you know, black people and their desires and these young kids and their protests. You know, this is upstanding American values. That's what this song represents to them.
So we're talking about, in the wake of Mad Men season premiere, set in 1966, we're talking about the music of what Anthony DeCurtis has, I think, aptly described as a transitional year in American pop. And we've asked you, our soundcheck audience, what you were listening to in 1966. And yes, comments have been coming in over the transom and into the control room. Joel Myers got some of them.
John, this one might relate a bit to Anthony's comment about the silent majority. Jim B. writes, "Let's not forget that for all the wonderful music diversity out there at the time, there was a lot of antagonism among the genres. Older people who liked Sinatra had no use for the Beatles and vice versa. The generation gap snowball was rolling along and growing bigger." Here's what Ellen from Brooklyn had to say about that diversity. "Popular radio in New York in the 60s played everything. Sinatra, The Stones, Louis Armstrong, Herb Alpert, The Beatles, Motown. They were all on the airwaves together on AM radio. I was listening most to The Beatles and other British invaders, but all of the above were played on stations like WABC, WINS, and WMCA, and vied for the top spots in the weekly countdowns. And it was great."
I remember those weekly countdowns. I mean, maybe not from 1966, but, you know, those things stuck around for a while.
Absolutely.
And they were important.
I do remember them from 1966. And, yeah, that was fun. That was great.
So what about, you know, the idea that there was still room for kind of traditional values, traditional pop? And I'm about to introduce a Rolling Stones song. You
know, yes.
The idea that the Rolling Stones album Aftermath, you know, you think of a song like Under My Thumb, or the even more misogynistic Stupid Girl. This was acceptable expression.
Oh, yeah. This was, I mean, you wouldn't even think that, you know, there was a problem with it. I mean, I always think, too, that in the Marvin Gaye song, you know, I'll Be Doggone, which is, you know, there's a line in that song that just goes, "Every woman should try to be whatever her man wants her to be." And that's
nice.
Presented as just a
just
basic
the
truth.
Way.
You know, like, you know, who could possibly question that? You know, the hostility or the kind of anger, the nastiness of Under My Thumb and certainly Stupid Girl is a kind of thing that would, again, would not have really raised an eyebrow at the time. In the same way that Don Draper, I remember in one scene in Mad Men, like something fell on the floor, and as he's walking out, he just turns to Betty Draper and says, "Clean it up."
Mm.
You know, it just, again, it, who else would do it?
Well, this was what passed for gender relations in 1966. Rolling Stones, Under My Thumb, one of the great songs from Aftermath, whatever you may think of the lyrics.
Exactly. Musically, it's happening. Totally.
Anthony, what about, you know, there was a change blowing through American society then, and it wasn't just, you know, feminism and women's rights, civil rights, you know.
Absolutely.
African Americans taking to the streets, often with, you know, their white counterparts to demand more equality and stuff. That begins to become a thread in the musical fabric.
Absolutely. And right around this time, as you see, you know, some of the kind of, you know, kind of white college kid protest movement, you know, the African-American civil rights movement, those connections are being forged. You know, I mean, for example, you know, Martin Luther King will come out against the Vietnam War in 1967, and that was a key moment. But, you know, in 1966, you have Stevie Wonder covering, you know, Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. And, you know, everyone thinks always of Motown achieving social consciousness with Stevie Wonder's later records or with Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a very early example of this. And, you know, Stevie's 16 years old and, you know, doing a Bob Dylan song, you know, just reaching across racially, reaching across, you know, politically, you know, making a very strong point. And, you know, this was a big hit. This was on the radio. And again, you know, just something that defined the transitions that were happening right at that moment.
As Anthony DeCurtis said at the beginning of the show today, 1966, a transitional year in American pop music. And perhaps this Stevie Wonder cover of the Bob Dylan Blowin' in the Wind is the best exemplar of that. Anthony, great to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Such a pleasure to be here, John. Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck. 1966, Stevie Wonder was 16 when he recorded this cover of Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan. Up next, we move from 1966 to the sounds of today. We hear a review of the brand new Madonna album, MDNA. And then coming up later, a live performance from the Swedish sister duo, First Aid Kit. This is Soundcheck.